And welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. And you know, I got to tell you, even though we're at the KUT studios here in Austin, I love that you're wearing your black and gold.
I did. I always try to remember on taping day.
Your leopard skin shirt.
It's feline print. And I realize that is not the mascot of Southwestern, but
I love the black
I'm
and gold.
I'm going with the colors that's for all, black that's and fine. Gold.
I don't know if there's a pirate motif that would look good on a blouse or a shirt.
I don't know. Well, yeah, I remember Seinfeld and the puffy
shirt. Oh, yeah, the puffy shirt.
That was somewhat... had a pirate.
There was a pirate theme, but it wasn't black and gold.
No, it was not black and gold.
it was
more
pirate.
Cream colored, but it did lean towards pirate style, I think.
What a great reference.
So I'm going to, for this episode, I'm going to do what I often do, which is refer to a previous episode, because often you will bring up something that...
Some words of wisdom.
And in my mind, I think, you know, we should probably talk about that as a whole separate deal.
Wonderful.
But I don't know if this is going to be something that, A, you remember saying, or B, that you're going to want to talk about. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting. So we were talking about, I'm pretty sure it was the episode, I believe, from last season about choosing a major in college.
Mm.
And, you know...
And everyone should choose math, by the way.
Everybody should
choose
math.
Is that what I said?
No, actually, you said it doesn't matter what you choose.
Well, that was wrong.
Okay, note to self.
Exactly.
New episode about college majors.
Major in math. Yeah.
You were saying that you took a couple of philosophy classes. I think you were close to having a double major in philosophy.
Yes.
And you referenced a particular philosophy professor.
Yes.
And I don't. It's a podcast, so I guess it's okay to use profanities. I'm not going to use a profanity, but you seem to indicate he was not a nice person. But you said he was a great teacher.
Yes.
You said he was a fantastic professor, but I think he wasn't very nice. He was kind of socially awkward. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
I know exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I've only had one philosophy professor. I took all my classes with him.
So
whatever he taught, I took.
Okay, so this is the guy.
I know.
It just is interesting to me, the thought of within one teacher, like you were so struck by his teaching skill and the impact of his wisdom in the classroom, but he sounded like not a nice person. So I want to talk about teachers, professors who are not nice people, but are really good teachers. And how can that be? Like, how can that be the same? How
this
can
is the
somebody?
Topic?
This is the topic.
Oh my goodness!
How somebody who
not nice people?
Yeah, and why you returned? Yeah. So I want to talk about how those things can coexist, because it seems to me that part of teaching is caring about students and wanting to nurture them and help them. And if that's not in your natural personality, you could be really smart at philosophy or economics, but maybe teaching.
Yeah.
So talk about this professor and why this was so meaningful for you.
So first of all, I need to say that this individual is no longer alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to just honor his memory by saying, first of all, he was not like an evil or bad person.
Or
a mean person. It's just that he wasn't nurturing, warm, coddling, and welcoming like you would think a popular professor would be. And by the way, in full disclosure, maybe he wasn't popular to other people. I mean, because what he was tough and serious. Yeah, that's how I would describe him. And he did not seem to, at least publicly, show much concern for his students. I mean, that's the bad part. But I think that might have been a little bit of an act.
Interesting.
I do believe he cared. He was a phenomenal. Yeah, this was a kind of a traditional philosophy class. And those intro classes are less Socratic and more kind of here's Plato and here's Descartes.
A little more lecture.
Yeah. And I found his lectures to be utterly fascinating at a very high level. It was extremely intellectual, but he had incredibly high standards. And so that might have been kind of like the not friendly part. And so it's not a matter of being nice, but it's a matter of setting great expectations, which I try to do. I mean, I try to be a little bit more relatable to my students in the sense that I want them to feel comfortable coming in to see me. And he was a little bit off-putting, I would say that. But, you know, I remember one of the episodes in the very first class that I took with him, which was Intro to Philosophy 101, Intro to Western Philosophy. And he just said, look, you're going to write several papers in this class and don't expect any decent grade at all. You will not do well because no one knows how to write philosophy papers when you first start, or the high standards. I forgot exactly how he put it. But it scared the pants off of me.
Yeah.
Because I was a grade grubber back then. Were you a grade grubber? Did you not care? Were you cooler than that? And said,
no,
it's okay.
I cared.
Yeah.
I cared.
So I think a lot of people do and they don't want to admit it. But I'll admit that I was this kind of grade focused person. And so I was really nervous about, but I think what it did was it forced me to take those papers much more seriously than I would have otherwise. And I got more immersed, and I just found, of course, philosophy is an amazing suite of human ideas to begin with. So that's a whole separate thing. But he just came across, and then I kept taking classes with him. And you would think that after four different classes, so it's 2 years, half of my career, I was taking him in a row. Semester, I started in my beginning of my junior year, and then every single semester, I took whatever he taught that I could take, that was appropriate. And I think by the end, maybe he knew who I was.
I was going to say, I think I remember you said that he didn't know your name.
Yeah, exactly. He called me Roger at one point. Yeah. But that I don't think matters as much. And so here's the thing. When you're talking about being a good teacher, there's this sense in our world today that, we need to be, nice and polite to each other and be, soothing. And I think that's true if we're talking about one human being to another. I think that we should be respecting each other, especially when we disagree, and we can thoughtfully debate things. That's something I think it's lacking in our country right now as kind of a meta issue. But I would say that if we're looking at someone as a teacher, and it doesn't have to be a formal teacher. I mean, I learn from you all the time and you learn from
people. Vice
versa, right, yeah. Well, so the point is that there are different ways to have high impact as a teacher, whether one has that as their vocation or is just mentoring someone else or is parenting, a child. And the truth is that there is something to be said for that kind of tough love. So it's not meanness, but it's tough love where you're just setting really high expectations. You want the person to be more independent. You want that person to maybe reach further than they thought they could. I mean, that's what I try to do in the classroom. Now, I do it in a different way because I have a different personality. But he did that, I think, for a lot of students, for generations of students, and he certainly did that for me.
So you said maybe it was an act? That's fascinating to me. Do you think that he wanted to strike a little fear into you guys?
I do, and I have no basis for this at all. But
other than time with him.
Oh, yeah.
You had a lot of time with
that's
him.
That's true, and I observed him and watched him. I just, I was at a small liberal arts school, very much like Southwestern. The classes were small. The intro to philosophy was actually quite large. I think there might have been like on the order of 50 people, which is huge for a philosophy class, but it was a lecture-style course. But after that, I took symbolic logic, human life and history, and then, I forgot the name of the class now, but something about meaning, life and meaning. And those were all very small classes. So maybe that first semester, okay. And by the way, just to brag a little bit, I did really well in that class, even though we were told that people aren't going to do well. I worked so hard.
Well, good for you, Roger.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So I was really proud of that grade, that actually. And so, maybe he would know the few people who did well in the class or not. But dismissing that, the moment I went into symbolic logic, it was just a handful of kids in the class. And, I was a math major. So this came very easy to me. I was drawn to it. I enjoyed it. He should have definitely known me by then, but there was no indication of that until maybe my senior year.
So I would like to quickly revisit our puzzler.
Ah, very good.
From last episode.
Has a philosophical aspect to it.
It does.
As all things in life does. I asked you, and let me just remind our listeners that last time I asked you if you could write the number 9 in Roman numerals, which you brilliantly did as an I and then an X. And then I asked if you can just add one character to that and make it an even number. That was the challenge. You immediately did it right on the notes in front of you, which annoyed the heck out of me. And you just did it again. You did it a second time now. So now you've done it again. Would you like to tell our listeners what you instantly did?
So what I did, so Roman numeral for 9 is IX. And so I just put an S in front of it, 6, the number 6, which is an even number.
I wonder if this is not a good audio puzzler, because I do say I and X, whereas if you see visually the I, X, you're thinking nine.
Well,
I wonder if that made it easy. Not that I'm dismissing it. I mean, you're brilliant, of course. But I'm wondering if maybe it's a better visual one than an audio one.
Well, it is interesting because, you know, we've talked before about how different people attack these. And I'm definitely a visual person.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Every time you introduce a new puzzle, I immediately start jotting things down.
That's right.
Do you remember the one about the guy and the light?
Yes.
You flipped out the
light. And you started
drawing what looks like a tree. I was trying to draw a lighthouse and the boat and the storm. And the
person. Remember that.
So it's just always easier for me to jot it down.
I see.
But that's just one style or approach.
By the way, it does point out one thing, which is the add the adjective way of understanding more deeply from the five elements of effective thinking, which is just by saying what you see, I, X, it makes you realize, oh, wait a minute. Well, S, I, X is six. And so, you know, whereas if you just saw visually IX, you might see that as one unit and not break it up as the two characters.
Right. Well, that's
And I
the
think
trick.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, And also to not make an assumption that it has to stay one unit, but, you know, it can be separate letters. Like, you don't have to see it.
Well, the big assumption, I think, is that it doesn't have to be Roman numerals.
Right.
That's the thing.
That you can transfer it into
to
letters.
A word. Into
yeah,
a word.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, anyway, you did it because you are a very effective thinker.
Well, at times.
Always.
At times.
Always.
At times.
Always.
So as we sort of wrap up our discussion about being a good teacher, what kind of personalities intersect or don't intersect with that, I just think this is fascinating.
Yeah.
Was it the content? What kept you so engaged that even though this professor had kind of an off-putting style, maybe less nurturing, especially when you get into kind of upper level, more discussion courses, if there's a student who maybe is struggling with that part of things and likes the subject, but the professor is just,
it happens so often in so many different subjects, especially in math and science, obviously.
How can students sort of hang with it when they maybe have a teacher or a professor like this?
Well, I think if you don't, it's not this, but if you don't resonate with the instructor, then I think that it's problematic and then you can be turned off from the subject because of the instructor.
Yeah.
I found his personality to be very intriguing and almost like alluring in a way. And so this was not an issue for me. And then the subject, I mean, philosophy, I think, is beautiful. And maybe as a mathematician, you know, philosophy and math are basically two sides of the same coin. And so I was drawn to it. I'd never studied it before. And so it was like a whole new world, a whole new vista that was opened up to me. And it was very exciting.
I don't want to ask about a specific instance, but in general, because you've been at a couple of different institutions of higher learning. This is the first one you've been president. But in the times when you have either had colleagues or in the time when you have been president, how do you interact with a teacher or a professor if you do think that they are not the most effective teacher that they could be? Or you sense that maybe it's more than an act when they're not being kind to Roger and his classmates?
I see. Well, first of all, from a formal point of view, in my current job, that is not part of my job. I mean, that would be like the dean of the faculty and our chief academic officer. So I wouldn't feel comfortable approaching someone and sharing that. Now, people have come to me throughout my career, whether I was just a colleague, whether I was chairing the math department or now in my role as president, who have come to me and just as an educator said, hey, can you come to my class and observe? And that is, by the way, a great gift. When someone invites you to one's class and you get to engage in the class and then watch this individual and learn from this person. And then afterwards, if they solicit, you know, what did you see or you have some constructive observations, I will share that. But they have to ask for it. I will not volunteer it. I just don't think, first of all, it's technically not my job and I don't want to, you know, make people feel self-conscious or bad. But also, you know, we need to treat our colleagues like adults. And if they want to reach out for help or guidance or advice or to become better, that's wonderful. And then I'm delighted to help. But otherwise, I have to keep quiet.
You have to go president.
I have to be in my presidential mode.
Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.